Let me tell you a story. Podcast number 151.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Call me Ishmael.
It was the age of wisdom.
Some years ago.
It was the age of fools.
Never mind.
It is a truth universally acknowledged.
This is Christmas without
you. You don't know about me without you.
Welcome to Let Me Tell You a Story with your hosts, Steve and Becky Lyles. Settle back into your seat, step onto your favorite fitness machine, or lace up your walking shoes, and enjoy stories from a variety of genres and authors.
Hi, this is Steve.
Hi, this is Becky. Welcome to Let Me Tell You a Story. We are honored today to have a special guest with us, a fellow, or I should say, sister author, Kathy Collard Miller. Kathy does much more than write award-winning, best-selling books, more than 60 of them. She also blogs, records videos, and speaks around the country and the world. In addition, Kathy and her husband, Larry, provide faith-based lay counseling for individuals as well as couples. I'm excited to learn more about Kathy and all she does. But for now, I'll say, welcome, Kathy. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, Becky and Steve, I am privileged to be with you. You are a delightful couple. We're going to have a great time.
I think so.
Because we're Idaho transplants like you and Larry, what brought you here?
Our grandkids, who actually live in Washington State, but it's a lot closer than 2 full days of driving from Southern California. So we are thrilled to be closer, and we can just pick up and go and not have to worry necessarily about flights.
So you somehow landed in Idaho, but the southern part.
Indeed, we have friends who live here. And so they were the first ones as we began to, you know, what could be closer and be something we could afford and politically comes into. So we did visit our friends and they were very enthusiastic. They had followed their grandkids up here from Southern California, where we had known them for 40 years. Oh, yeah. So they definitely gave us a good report and that got us going right away, and God sold our house in a weekend.
Wow.
So I'm curious to know how your writing career began. Are you one of those who always wanted to write, or did circumstances lead you into that first book?
Well, really both. When I was in junior high, I tried writing my first novel. It was called My Friend Rick, and it was going to be a romance, which I knew nothing about, but at junior high, oh well.
Right.
So it was always in the back of my mind, but I didn't know what a writer does. I writes, sure, but it just wasn't, I didn't have a lot of knowledge about it. So in high school, I was the editor of our high school newspaper, and Mr. Johnson, bless his little pea-picking heart, he was a journalist that demanded really important information, and we did such good reporting on what was happening at Downey High School in Southern California. And so I grew up and got married and attended church with my husband and heard clearly for the first time the gospel message. I thought I was a Christian, but I heard it clearly then. We, of course, had our obligatory children, and I never knew what an angry person I was. Looking back, I know that now. But I was very angry that Larry did not turn out to be my Prince Charming. And so I sought God. There's a lot more to that story. But as far as the writing angle, after God did heal our marriage and help me become a more patient mom, I thought, well, maybe I could write my story. And so Larry at one point said, oh, I heard about this community writing class. And so, okay, well, I'll go to that. And I found out how to write a query letter. And the only magazine that I was taking was the Christian magazine, Moody Monthly.
Oh, yeah.
So I sent a query letter off to them saying I wanted to tell my story of overcoming being an abusive mom, but it must be published anonymously because no one knew that God had delivered me from being a child abuser. And so that article was published. Then I went to a writer's conference, wrote my first book that was published in 1984. It's now called No More Anger, Hope for an Out of Control Mom. And from then, God just continued to open doors that a writer and a speaker would love. And I continue to be amazed over and over again at what he has done.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. How did you and Larry get started speaking together?
As a part of our healing, we became involved in a kind of Christian marriage encounter. Then after we were so healed from it, they asked us to become a presenting couple. That's where you're one of the couples that shares. Well, I thought it was really great that we were doing this together. And so because of the contact that we had with people during the seminars, our name became popular. And so we were getting invitations to speak. And so it was just by natural word of mouth, little by little. And then once the book was published, then I began speaking. And so again, it was just word of mouth and little by little doors opened. And now we've spoken around the world. And it just, again, astounds us that God took what, I mean, our marriage was so bad that I prayed that the plane that he was flying for a hobby would crash. And Steve and Becky, I meant it. I knelt by my bed and I pleaded with God because Larry had no interest in me any longer. No interest in the children. I was on my own. I was furious, and I figured I would just be better without him. But you know, sometimes you're grateful when God doesn't answer yes. And of course, that was before then we started speaking and ministering. That showed not only how angry I was, and Larry would tell you himself how selfish he was. He was totally invested in what he wanted to do. He was also a cop. He loved law enforcement. He was doing that for 30 years. God did begin to heal us before the end of that. But just little by little, God began to open opportunities, and we were both willing to do it.
I'm guessing that your speaking and writing weren't just focused on your marriage and on anger, but you've expanded greatly. So tell us a little bit more about what you write about.
I would love to. And yes, you're right. The first book was about anger. The second one was about parenting without anger. The first one was the memoir. So that told the story. Then the second one was about parenting with less anger than a person would be experiencing. Then I began to see the pattern. Whatever I was struggling with and dealing with better and better through God's help became the next book. And then I was given an opportunity to give ideas for a women's Bible study series. And so then I began to do that on different topics that I was interested in. But little by little, I did more and more. So I have a book called Pure Hearted, which is about our motives, because I began to examine my own motives. Why was I doing what I wanted? And I found out I was a lot more selfish and unpurely motivated. And then I also wrote books on parenting, on worry. then it was like, oh, I'm really noticing how I'm more worried than I thought. Oh, what am I learning from God about that? So I wrote a book about that. And then God began to expose how much I was a perfectionist. Oh my gosh. So I began speaking about that. And I wrote a book about that called Why Do I Put So Much Pressure on Myself and Others? So little by little, it was what God was doing in my life. And I'm still not perfect, and I still worry, but less and less. And so that's what I look out for. What is God doing in my life right now? And in a couple months, I will be having my latest book put out, and it's on another angle about anger. It's called Anger Management Jesus Style. And in this book, I look at what Jesus faced while on earth that you or I, at least if you're like me, would have gotten upset about. I am misunderstood. I am criticized. And Jesus went through all those things without nary an angry, sinful reaction. How could he do that? He was fully human. He was tempted in the same ways. And so I began to pay attention. All these examples. What was Jesus's thinking, his motives, his beliefs? And it started to just turn into this book that is now going to be almost 300 pages. And I am just amazed at what God did and the insights he gave me as I studied those individual examples that Jesus went through. I found it fascinating.
That's great. I was curious about your next book.
That's it.
About perfection, though, or being a perfectionist, you know, God is perfect, and he says, be perfect like I'm perfect. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're on the right track to be a perfectionist, I think.
Well, I won't say you're a perfectionist, but I developed this 9-question quiz that as I went around speaking, often on perfectionism, I had the women fill out this quiz. 2,500 women filled out this quiz from various locations across the United States. And it was fascinating to me. I began to see, and what I told them was, if you check 3 or more of the 9 statements, you have perfectionist tendencies. Because all of them are thinking, oh, I didn't check 9, so I'm not a perfectionist. But they have the characteristics of what bothers them. Like my anger book coming out, they don't like to be misunderstood. They don't like to be criticized because now they're being seen as less than.
Yes.
And so, but to answer your original question, Steve, God does say, be perfect as I am perfect, because I believe he wants us to see we never can be, and that's why we need Jesus. And you will achieve or reach that perfection in Christ.
Yes.
And I can't think of the verse. And in the Bible, it says that we are complete. Colossians 2:10 says we are complete in Christ. And that word complete in the Greek also can be translated perfect. And so we never will be perfect on our own. But God sees us as perfect because the robe of righteousness is wrapped around us. And that's the difference, I believe. Yes.
And I was joking, but it's a great explanation.
Yes. Yeah, in my Bible study group, we're looking at a different passage where perfect means complete.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad that that is being preached, because so many people are the perfectionists who don't realize they're a perfectionist. Maybe they would just check 5 on the 9 statements and think, oh, I don't need to work on this. And, oh, the gal over there that we knew would click and check 9 of the statements, everybody was looking at her like she's the perfectionist, and she's so relieved when she realizes everybody else almost checks something, and that area bothers them. They're willing to let other things go, but that thing that they checked is that which drives them crazy, and they demand other people or themselves or God, because he said, be perfect as I am perfect. So I'm glad you brought that up.
So did you find any other interesting results from that survey?
I think that people, women in particular, I write always for women, but except when Larry and I write together. So I think that they realize that it's not an all or nothing kind of designation. And I would get reports from people from the, say, the book or from the retreat where I would speak or share. I share a lot at MOPS groups, Mothers of Preschoolers. They are prime candidates for not identifying their perfectionist tendencies, like all or nothing, believing that everybody else should get their act together, believing they should have their act together by now. And you know, we're all little long in the tooth. And so you can imagine a 20-year-old mom of 2 comes up to you and says, I should have my act together by now. Oh. As if at 20, at 20, she's already struggling with anger and believing that she's a bad person. Mm. And she's the only one. That was one of the lies that so discouraged me when I was hurting my daughter, a 2-year-old. I believed that I was the only one, and certainly the only Christian, that was struggling the way that I was. And it was so discouraging, I couldn't tell anybody. And so when God finally told me, Kathy, I want you to tell the women in your neighborhood Bible study where you are leading the Bible study that you have a problem. And it was like, I can't do that because they look to me. They think I'm the perfect mom. Yeah. How are they going to trust God if they don't think that I am good enough? And that was during the time that I almost used Larry's off-duty service revolver to end my life. Wow. Because I thought I was going to kill my daughter in one of my next rages. God prevented me from using that gun. But then I had to get help. I was screaming inside for help. And I shared with my Bible study group, I have an anger problem. I need help. Kathy, you're fine. We've seen you with your little girl. You're fine. Oh, yeah, I'm really good in public. I'm really good in public. I have a problem. I need you to pray for me to keep me accountable. It was that accountability. James 5:16. Admit your faults to one another and pray for each other so you may be healed. And every week when I went to Bible study, I knew one or more were going to ask, how are you doing? I've been praying for you. And that was one of many big things that God did to pull me out of that pit, to give me hope, and to even know that, you know what? One of the gals said, Kathy, don't you know that I got angry at my little boy? Really? Yeah, we all get angry. You do? I thought I was the only one. Mm-hmm. Because from childhood, I had thought that any anger was sin, and you just stuff it. And that volcano that had been there for years then came out towards Larry because he was so selfish, and he will tell you that. And that little girl who did not want to cooperate with my toilet training programs and also had a temper tantrum that would have fried you because she's very strong-willed. Oh.
So
and
two
to
of
this
you.
Day, she is willing to say that, and her little girl is just like her.
Oh, my. Oh, so did you have therapy during that time? Or?
You know, I did not, but I do not advise that. Mm. I did make an appointment with the pastor, one of the pastors at our large church. And for some reason, I forget now, it had to be canceled. And I slipped right back into my lie. Oh, I'll be okay. It's going to be okay. I was good yesterday. And so I did not make another appointment, but I should have. So I always say, find good help. A wise counselor, go to your church and don't let anyone tell you, you just need to trust God more. Yes, we need to do that, but we need support. We need help to go to the bottom of the lies that are feeding the anger. And Larry and I, for our lay counseling, have written a book called Never Ever Be the Same. And we use a way for people to get to the underlying childhood lies that they began to believe in order to protect themselves. And so we have found that to be extremely, extremely effective. And it's all based in what lie about God.
Oh.
Did you believe when you were little, or what strategy did you form? Like mine, one of mine was perfectionism. I'll just do everything right and then fail and make a recommitment and fail. But I didn't know why the underlying things were bothering me in my situation.
I was going to ask how that all led into your lay counseling.
Mm. We were invited to attend a counseling seminar, several days, and we thought, you know, this is good. We go out, we speak on marriage at conferences, and during free time, invariably, someone comes up and they want to talk in 30 minutes to solve their marriage problems. So we felt so inadequate, and we're just giving them pat answers, and they're good pat answers. Pray together, communicate better, those kind of things. But invariably, it seemed like as we would follow up that there was something deeper that was bothering them. And so at this counseling, we didn't realize that at this counseling seminar, we were going to get counseled.
Oh, fun.
And we began to realize we weren't just learning techniques to give to people. We were first being addressed. So we came back and we thought, okay, we're going to use this for the seminars. Well, Larry's best friend said, well, you know what, who is a businessman, said, I've got a man on my board for my business that has a very difficult marriage. And I told him you guys would give him counseling. We had never given like weekly counseling to anybody. We just arrived and left and, you know. And so I said, no, this isn't what we signed up for. I'm terrified. We don't know how to do it in those terms. But okay, we'll try it. So we began to see what worked and what didn't work. And then we began to do a lot of studying with other counselors like Larry Crabb, Dan Allender, others that were along with this. There's something at the bottom. There's an underlying cause underneath just the behavior solve. Mm-hmm. No. Why? The why. And so we began to see that there was progress, and we began to formulate sort of what we saw worked best, and that became the book. That became the book, and of course we ask whoever wants to come to us to read the book first.
Sure.
Yeah.
Fun progression.
What keeps you writing and returning to your desk every morning?
I love to write. I'm just born for it. I think that way. I am a question asker. I can come up with questions. Larry and I are a great team. He's a solver and I'm a question asker. And so we both ask questions, but he jumps a little bit sooner to the solver. And I just want to, why? I ask questions. So as I prepare to write a book on a topic, why is Jesus treating people in this good way when you or I would just want to yell at them? Mm-hmm. When he would share the truth and they would be totally closed to it, I would take it personally. You?
Yeah.
I'm giving you truth? And you turn away? It's all about protecting me. Jesus never felt like he needed to protect his image. Isn't that amazing?
It is.
And you know, people often say, well, Jesus healed everybody. No, he didn't. In Luke 5, 15 and 16, there were people clamoring to get to him. And the Bible says, and he turned away, I'm paraphrasing,
right.
He turned away and went up into the mountains to have time with his father. All those needy people are going, well, I came all this way, and he was supposed to heal me. Boy, am I going to go tell everybody he's a fraud. Mm-hmm. Jesus was never worried that people were going to speak ill about him, and he had the freedom to obey and abide through the Spirit. God, what do you want me to do right now? What other people want me to do? And see, that's the other thing. I'm a people pleaser. So I'm always reading the room. Are they unhappy with me? What can I do to make them happy with me? That's a part of perfectionism. That's a part of anger, the source of anger. That's a part of worry. It's a part of so much of our life. Jesus was never a people pleaser. He only wanted to please his Father. And that is how you and I can be more patient with people, not get bothered by them, and act in a godly manner with the fruit of the Spirit rather than ungodly anger. Now, there is righteous anger. We saw that in Jesus.
Right.
So it's not as if we never feel. And Ephesians 4 says, be angry and yet do not sin.
Right.
So I don't think God, it says you will never feel angry, but it's what we do with it. What lies or truths we apply to it that then gives us the ability to see where we're trying to have our own way rather than even being misunderstood, criticized, looked down on, all those other things. And there's 11 chapters in my book, and I just cover different areas that we could possibly become angry.
Interesting. In all of your speaking travels around the country and around the world, I'm guessing you've had a few fun encounters and experiences, and maybe some that were even a little bit scary. Do you have a couple that might come to mind?
I sure do. The biggest one is that I had a grand mal seizure for the first time in my life at the steps of the Parthenon in Athens, Greece. Larry and I have been to Greece 9 times on ministry. We help out a church there. We put on seminars and just do private counseling, both on the island of Zakynthos and in Athens. Mm. And so I love the Parthenon. I absolutely love the Parthenon. We had just climbed to the top earlier that day. I also love the Greek salad, which is much better than the American Greek salad.
Ah.
And so we had gone up to the Parthenon, the Acropolis, come down, and they had just set before me at the restaurant this Greek salad. I was about to take my first bite. Oh, I couldn't wait. And I looked at my husband, and I sort of went like this, and he says, "Are you okay?" And I was on the ground having a grand mal seizure.
Wow. Wow.
And so, as it turned out, I am epileptic, but nothing bad happened. And so that was quite an adventure.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And then I'll tell you a funny story. When we went to Trinidad, I don't know how much you guys have traveled, but when you go to a different culture, especially if you are ministering in any way, you don't know everything the culture is about. So we had just finished our last seminar talk in Trinidad, and several of the people in charge came up and handed us gifts. Well, what do Americans do when you're given a gift? You open it so that you can say thank you. Well, as I'm opening it, I feel like there's this quiet in the whole room.
Oh, no.
Like they're going, but I didn't know anything. So I just keep unwrapping because I love gifts. And our missionary friend said later, "Oh, I forgot to tell you. You aren't supposed to open gifts in front of the people." Oh. Now, they were gracious. We're just visitors. We're foreigners. They don't know anything. So they were very gracious, never said anything about it. But it was a weirdest feeling that you could just hear the room go, And so now we learned that was actually our first ever overseas mission trip to speak. And so now we ask more questions. Can you open gifts? Are there words we should not say that don't translate well? In fact, when we were speaking on the island of Zakynthos, the pastor who was born and raised Greek but came to know Christ in America speaks fluent English. And so we always go over our talks so that we know, you know, what might not be appropriate to say. And so as he read one of our words that just translate beautifully in America, and I can't say this word because it is not acceptable. The translation comes through with a very sexual connotation. And so I couldn't say that word because it would not be translated correctly. Anyway, we learned this, that as we have gone around to 9 and spoken in 9 different countries, that we try to get as much information. But you know what? People are so gracious. We make mistakes all the time. There's no way we can have the same mindset. Right. So we know that they will be gracious and forgive us.
Well, I'm sure your sweet attitude helps too.
Well, I hope so. I hope so.
What tips or encouragement do you have for new writers?
Oh, I love that topic. In fact, I was just having the monthly critique group that I have for a particular women's ministry group. And so to see those, and these are all aspiring writers, and to tell them, you're all thinking about writing a book. Don't think about writing a book. And of course, this is nonfiction, and Becky, I know that you're fiction, and this wouldn't apply. But for nonfiction, don't think of writing a book. Think of a chapter or a article and collect those on the same topic. Because to write a book, whether fiction or nonfiction, is a huge task, and it's very easy to get overwhelmed, to get discouraged, to give up. And so I love to say, you know what? You have all given us today. We critique these. Now just write. Try to send it out as an article. Get it published. In the meantime, write another devotional article about the same topic. And now you are going to be collecting and writing your book in that way. But in the meantime, you get it out there. And so you're not waiting forever.
Yes.
For this big all or nothing project that may or may not get written, or the Lord directs you in a new direction, or mm-hmm. or whatever. Think small. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when I teach about perfectionism, I love to share on the 1% principle. The 1% principle says, don't think in terms of only giving credit to the Lord or yourself when you've done something 100% of the way. Think, what one thing can I do today that may seem small, but the Lord will develop it 1% at a time. And then you won't get discouraged, and the Lord can even use that before you're waiting for your big project to be done.
Yeah, great advice.
Yeah.
A fiction writer could consider short stories.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I think I find them more challenging.
Really? And why is that?
Because you have to say it all in 500 words or 3,000 or whatever.
And you can't put in all the wonderful details
right.
and characteristics of the character and everything like that. So I can see that.
Although that's good experience to learn to write concise.
There you go.
Concisely.
Yes, correct your English there.
We have one more question, but you may have more you would like to talk about also that we didn't ask about. You want to ask this one or you want me to?
So it's open mic for you if you have something else.
Well, I can really say it sounds very complete and thorough to me. I've loved the variety of your questions. And but
that's Becky's work. She wrote them.
Ah, yeah. Good job. You must be a writer. You really should be a writer.
That's my nonfiction right there.
There you go. There you go. I can't think of anything right now.
Okay.
Oh, I do know.
Yes.
Okay.
Of course. Everybody wonders, how did that little girl turn out?
Oh, good question.
And she is the mother of two, married for 22 years. She loves the Lord. She is on the women's ministry staff at her church. She is a novelist.
Uh-huh. Uh-oh.
Yet to be published, but I love her stuff. And she forgave me early. She did not remember what happened. By the time she was three, I was really pretty much calm. Not all the time.
Sure.
But she did not have an independent memory. When she read my first book that was the memoir, she knew then that that is what happened to her. She had no shame. That book came out when she was 10 years old. She was in, I think, fifth grade. She wanted to share it with her teacher.
Wow.
And she took it to school. I found out later that it was passed around to all the teachers and the principal read it. And when it was returned, there was a note from her teacher. And this note said, I really love your daughter. She's a happy, well-adjusted little girl.
Wow.
And I had always feared that I had ruined her, that there was no way that she could ever be a normal human being, much less love me and love the Lord. And yet she does. And her life has not been perfect. And she struggles, of course. But, oh, she loves me. And she has forgiven me. And I love to tell young moms, your child is more forgiving of you than you realize. And when your child says, I forgive you, Mommy, they are sincere. I believe God has given them that grace to be able to do that. And of course, the mom is thinking, I don't deserve it. Even God can't forgive me. And there's no hope. So for those young moms listening, for any mom who has hurt their child in any way, that child wants to forgive you because it's better for them.
Sure.
Also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now they are learning, if mommy asks me for my forgiveness, what am I supposed to do?
Cool.
Because I'm going to hurt people.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do things that are wrong. And God wants to forgive me, just like God has forgiven mommy. So God really uses everything. That is what I would want to always make sure. Always make sure that people know.
God uses everything, especially children.
Yeah. Well, thank you for including that, though you have me crying.
Well, I was crying too, so you guys got up.
Oh, but what a gift from that teacher. Yeah. Well, from your daughter and from that teacher.
Yeah, truly needed, needed.
So you have a really good sense of humor. Do you incorporate that in your speaking and in your writing?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you that that was an area that I did not really believe I could have, because I am by nature more serious. I'm a melancholy, analytical. And so I did not realize that I was incorporating anger, that I was incorporating humor. And I would have people, women, come up to me afterwards and say, "You're just the funniest speaker, but I got the point." And it was like, oh, wow, God, I didn't have to strive for it. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to, and I'm not saying I didn't listen to speakers and learn and you know,
sure.
And at speakers conferences, you're going to learn classes, go through classes. Sure, it can be learned. And I always tell people that it can be learned. But it is also something that you just begin to notice the funny things of life. And you learn what works. So when I would give my story over and over and over again, oh, that was important to them. Either they cried, or they laughed, or they were uncertain or curious. So I began to develop those answers that they didn't know I was answering their questions that they were having. But you pay attention, and you do this too, Becky. You pay attention. What did I say right then that they looked sort of skeptical? Ah, maybe I need to flesh that out. Or they laughed at that. Okay, I didn't think it was that funny, but evidently they do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's not so much what you say, it's how you say it. Mm-hmm. And even though I would be telling a very difficult story, I began to notice when they were relieved, when they were buying into it, mm-hmm. I could tell when they had yelled at their child before leaving for the retreat because they are like trying to suck it up, just the guilt, and don't show anybody that I'm that person like that. And so then I would have an opportunity to pull her aside or free time. I always make myself available at free time. And I've given counseling 8 hours all the way into the night after doing the evening presentation. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning, I rise early and they're coming to talk to me. That is fabulous. That is amazing when they feel comfortable to come and I welcome them into my room and they say, "Your story is my story, and I've never told anybody." And I can assure them that there is hope because my daughter loves me today. And God opened up a ministry that I never anticipated, and Larry also never anticipated. Mm-hmm.
How can readers contact you or find your books?
Well, first of all, my website is a good place, and that's KathyCollardMiller.com. Kathy with a K and a Y, you never know. Kathy Collard, like collard greens, C-O-L-L-A-R-D, Miller.com. And then, of course, I have an Amazon author page. And then I'm available to talk with people. And would just love for them to pay particular attention when my next book, Anger Management Jesus Style, is published by Elk Lake Publishing.
Oh. Your contact information, like email and phone number, are those on your website?
Not the phone number, but okay. There is a contact page.
Okay.
And so, but, you know, we're all in this together. So definitely if they want to write me at KathyCollardMiller@gmail.com, I am available.
Thanks so much, Kathy Collard Miller, for coming here to our fancy front room studio. And
I think it's delightful, and I love your style. I love seeing couples work together because it can be a challenge, but you guys, I can just see. How long have you been married?
In 3 months, in July, will be 50 years.
All right. Well, we're going to be 54 in June. And you know what, you guys, I can tell there's a very healthy, happy marriage. We all have our times of a little bit of, I won't even call it struggle. It's disagreement. And you know what? We're all right and we're all wrong at different times.
So well, 50 years, that tells you Becky's getting old.
Not used to.
No.
Well, and into these 50s of being married, if only we could tell the people that end their marriages at 5 years, 8 years, 15. And I mean, even hear of people at 30 years and... It's too bad. It's worth hanging in there.
It is worth hanging in there. And I don't think that I mentioned specifically that that time when we were at our worst was when we had been married 7 years. And I believe there is a real 7 year itch. And I don't know what it is about that timing. And it's not true with everybody. But yes, hang in there. Because if you don't, you're just going to go on to the next person that you think is going to be perfect for you and meet all your needs. But that's what you thought when you married your first husband or wife.
Right.
And so, see it as a way to draw closer to God and to have those underlying lies exposed so that there is long lasting growth and sanctification, because that is what God is doing.
I worked at a place where there were kids, I guess I'd say 20, 21. They had already been married and divorced twice.
Oh, yes. It's so painful.
Yeah.
Too easy.
Satan is alive and knows, and you know, his bag of tricks is pretty small.
It is. Yeah.
But we don't recognize what's in the bag.
Now, I like your approach of addressing the lies that we believe. In fact, that reminds me, with fiction writing, we're supposed to look at our protagonists and say, what are the lies they believe about themselves? So that you go there in real life.
I knew you were supposed to come up with problems, but I love novels that are like, what's going on? What created this belief system in this the character? Mm-hmm. And so I am glad to hear that, because I don't know that I see a lot of that. And that, to me, is where a novel can be very sanctifying. Because if we identify with the lies and the strategies that the protagonist or whatever believes, then, I believe that same thing.
Yeah.
So I wondered about trying to write a novel that sort of takes these ideas that we use and see if that can work. Uh-huh. I don't know that I can really make it work.
I like the idea.
Well, we'll see how the Lord leads.
Yeah. Because you have the, not just the background, but you've talked to so many people. So you know the lies, and the problem is you just have to pick one or two.
That would be the challenge. I would want to include them all in our character.
Kathy, thanks so much for coming today and joining us. This has been great. You have a real good heart, passion for what you do. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Kathy. And we also thank our listeners. Remember, you too have a story. Be sure to live it to the fullest.
Thank you for listening to Let Me Tell You a Story. Please email your comments, suggestions, and submissions to story@beckylyles.com. Go. that's all for now. Tune in next time to enjoy a fresh assortment of stories on Let Me Tell You a Story.